You're listening to Shop Talk with your host, Kevin Tates. Brought to you by Eastwood Tools. Everything you need to do the job right.
Hey, gearheads, you're listening to Shop Talk, brought to you by the Eastwood Company. Do the job right with Eastwood. Today's show touches on a subject that some people may think is out of their league as far as the money that it takes or the talent that it takes to learn. We're talking about racing. Now, I'm not talking about boulevard cruising or street racing. We're talking about actual track racing. And you may be surprised of what forms of racing are affordable. We'll be talking about track events and racing on designated race courses, as well as answering another Eastwood listener's question and giving out another $25 gift certificate for Eastwood Tools and Equipment. Now, there are entire segments of the automotive hobby dedicated to this sport, more specifically on an entry level. Grassroots Motorsports is a very popular magazine dedicated to just that, entry level and low-cost racing and racing events. Our guest today is none other than Ryan Shand, co-host of Trucks and Truck Tech, seen on NBC and CBS sports channels, as well as Spike Network. Ryan is a master certified mechanic, UTI and BMW training graduate, and a career technician with an uncanny knack of being able to diagnose almost any failure, making him a great mechanic, but also giving him an edge on being able to explain and break down problems where people can understand it. Having an SCCA track license and having built and driven several race cars, well, that makes for a pretty interesting conversation. So get comfortable and take a listen to a conversation with Ryan Shand. You're listening to Shop Talk. I'm Kevin Tates, and we've got a special guest today that has seen his share of track time as well as his share diving into engine compartments and underneath cars, all kinds of stuff. He's a career technician as well as an interesting cat in the sense that he jumped ship from being a career technician to a TV host. We're talking about Ryan Shand. Ryan, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Kevin?
No, not too bad. Well, I got a ton of questions for you, but I want to find out, what are you guys doing on the show right now?
We got a good bit cooking. We just put a set of wheels on the Super Dually, a project that's been hanging around for a few years and needs to be finished up, but we got the wheels put on it today that provide a little bit of inspiration, some motivation to get that thing finished up. So that thing's coming down the home stretch. We've got a 93 Chevy kind of budget sport truck working. V8 fun, two-wheel drive truck. We've got a 07 Jeep project that looks like it's going to get an engine swap. So that looks pretty cool and should be an interesting dual-purpose on-off-road Jeep. And we got a 55 F100 in the shop recently that's an abandoned project from somebody else, and we'll see where we can pick up where they left off and turn it into a cool pickup truck. So we got a variety of things going.
It covers the spectrum, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah, for you guys that are listening, Ryan is the co-host of Truck Tech now, formerly known as Trucks, and it's a little bit surreal me asking you what you guys are doing on the show when I'm still kind of on the show. So
yeah.
it's kind of fun to be a voyeur in a sense, but I don't know. So I'm very familiar with all of those projects, so it's cool. But if you guys ever get the chance, people that are listening, watch Truck Tech on NBC Sports, CBS Sports, or Spike Network. It's a good watch, man. It's good how-to stuff, and we appreciate you being here, Ryan. So let's talk about racing. It's been called the gentleman's sport, and that has a connotation all of its own. It's racing seems accessible to somebody that doesn't know about it and hasn't educated themselves about the different aspects of racing, entry-level racing, FCCA, all that type of stuff. How accessible is it? Let's just get right to it. Is it a gentleman's sport? Is it unobtainium? Is it expensive?
I mean, there's no two ways about it. It's not a cheap sport. I mean, the cost of consumables make it expensive. However, depending on how you look at it, you can make it, you know, a budget-friendly event. Just the entry fees, you know, they add up, but it depends on how you go about it. You know, the route I took was more of a do-it-yourself route. It made things a little bit more accessible to the guy on a, you know, more typical budget. And, you know, there's guys out there that are doctors and lawyers, and, you know, they pay somebody else to maintain their car and, you know, bring their car to the track and fix it when it's broken after the weekend. And then there's guys that show up in a pickup truck and an open trailer and a somewhat affordable race car and have just as much fun as the big guys. So, there's no two ways about it. You're going to have to pay to play. But well, there's varying levels.
Well, I agree with that. And there's also varying levels of fishing. And there's varying levels of gun ownership and snowmobiling. I mean, a good snow machine is going to cost you $5,000 any way you look at it. And you could probably get into an entry-level Miata or something like that for $5,000, can't you?
Absolutely, yeah. And the Miatas are one of the more popular classes for people to get started, actual wheel-to-wheel racing. Of course, that comes after, you know, more than a few days on the track learning to drive, you know, and the techniques and what goes into it. But, yeah, when it comes time to actually competing in racing, Miatas are a pretty affordable and reasonably priced, you know, at that level way to get into the sport.
Right, right. Well, I'm not going to ask you how much money you sank into your first race car because your wife is probably going to be listening.
Within your shot.
I won't go there. But I do want to ask you, you being a do-it-yourselfer, a guy that's handy with a welder and, you know, understands suspension dynamics and fabrication, how much time did it take you to prep an entry-level car? What kind of time did you have invested in it?
I didn't keep track of the exact hours, but it was mostly, you know, it was a pretty basic car. My first car was a 5-liter Mustang. It was essentially stock with, you know, some power under the hood. But when it came time to actually prepping a car for the track, went with a little 3 Series BMW, and it didn't take a whole lot of modification to the suspension. So, you know, I did have some hours in it, but it was mostly evenings, you know, during the work week. The most labor-intensive part was the roll cage, the installation of that. But, you know, if you had to put a time frame on it, you could probably, you know, a couple strong weekends worth of work, and you can, you know, install the necessary safety gear to get on track. Because that's essentially, you know, what it takes to get on track is the safety gear. Everything else is kind of subjective, whether you want suspension, you know, more power under the hood, brakes, you know, but the safety gear is what's essential.
Yeah. Well, and that makes common sense as well. And that should be expensive. I mean, we're putting our lives in that.
Yeah, it depends on how much you value your life, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, pertaining to the roll cage, we've got a listener's question that emailed us a question in that's related to that. So we'll get to that in a second. By the way, you guys that are listening, if you email me a question and we read it out loud on Shop Talk, you get a $25 gift certificate for anything that's in the Eastwood catalog. So keep that in mind when you're listening to these podcasts, and, you know, just send a random question in. Doesn't matter. I mean, don't ask about naughty things, but other than that, it's wide open. But, it's truly a DIY sport. Yes.
Yeah, I would say yes, it is. If you don't mind getting your hands dirty and giving it a shot, yeah, it's something you can do.
Well, anybody that relates to car restoration or some kind of fabrication or modification of any vehicle, you know, we're going to get our hands dirty. Heck, if you change your oil, you're going to get your hands dirty.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, having said that, so we've established that it's accessible, it's affordable to a point, if you have a separate checking account, and you know, what is somebody going to expect on their first day? Now, the misnomer is that you blister in through the gate and you pass the start finish line and you just pedal to metal and your balls to the walls racing instantly. That's not really how it is, is it? Explain the process of beginners to intermediate.
Yeah, that certainly wasn't the case with what I did. You know, there is racing schools that are more concentrated where you show up for a week and, you know, with a goal of getting a competition license. It depends on which way you go. There are concentrated week-long courses to get your competition license. It's really intensive. You're in and you're out in a week, and hopefully you've learned enough and absorbed enough in that time period to move on to actually do wheel-to-wheel racing. I approached it more of a slower process. More of a grassroots with the National Autosport Association, NASA. And basically, they have a tiered system where you start out as a beginner in Group 1, then, the intermediate Group 2, then the advanced in Group 3. And, you know, they want you to take your time moving up through the classes. They don't want to rush anybody into wheel-to-wheel racing. It's you're going wide open on the racetrack. It's something you need to take seriously, and it's something they take seriously. Basically, you start out in Group 1, and, you know, they don't throw you to the wolves. The first thing is a classroom session. Everybody gets on the same page, what's being expected, you know, what's expected on the track. You know, you need to know your flag. You're going to be riding with an instructor, or the instructor's going to be riding with you. So they really do ease you into the, you know, the the intimidating, or what can be intimidating, road course racing. I mean, but most people, you know, never been on a racetrack, myself included, in my first day, you know, I was very comfortable. You show up, they ease into it, they get you out on track, they start teaching you the fundamentals, and, you know, nobody's going to set any lap records in Group 1. It's just the way it is. No matter how good a driver you think you are on the street, driving on a racetrack is just a different animal. You know, it's something they ease you into, and it's something that, you know, you progress as you feel comfortable, as your instructors feel comfortable.
Well, we did a show, those of you guys that haven't watched the truck show, we built this Ranger on the show and turned it into essentially a very well-balanced race vehicle. And getting seat time in that thing, it was, 650 horsepower-ish at the engine. Great big tires, 12.5-inch wheels, 305, 35s on the big, big, tuned suspension, great weight bias front to rear, full roll cage. It was a race car dressed up as a truck. And to have seat time in that vehicle, I got to tell you, and you probably saw it by the clenched teeth and the look on my face, it was a little bit intense to get behind the wheel of that vehicle on a racetrack. So I know what you're saying about it, you know, it being somewhat intimidating to get on the track. But it's nice to know that somebody can go in there and you're kind of, I don't want to say being held by the hand, but you're being guided into it in a sense to where the layers of let's just face it, the layers of fear get burned off. Would you say that's
exactly
accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you sit on the, you know, in pit lane and waiting to go out on the track, you know, you got butterflies in your stomach. But once you go out on the track and you've got an experienced instructor riding with you, he's telling you when to, you know, okay, now it's, you know, hit your brake marker here, look for the apex here, track out, you know, they actually, you know, not walk you through the process, they ride with you through the process of learning the line, and it's just learning your braking points, your apex points, track out. It's a lot to absorb, but they're there to help you through the way, and it really does, you know, takes the intimidation away. And once you do it once, you get out for a session, the hook is set, and you know, all you can think about is the next time you're out on the track.
Yeah, yeah. And I know that autocross is not necessarily the same thing as track racing, but the reason I bring it up is the event that you and I went to, the American Streetcar Series, Brian Finch's deal, they had the Jet Hot Coatings driving school there. And I thought, man, that's great to have that accessible to people. You know, it doesn't matter what car. You don't have to have a 500-horsepower Camaro to be a part of that. I thought that was a neat thing to be a part of or for them to provide to people, you know, kind of at no cost. If you pay your entry fee, you're in with the driving school. No, I take that back. There was a bit of a charge for that, but it wasn't very much. These guys that want to autocross, how different is a Gymkhana or an autocross to an open track? And there's no right or wrong answer. It's just, is it a different feeling? Is there different speeds? Are you more alone on the track?
Autocross, you know, it's basically everything is the same as on a racetrack as far as, you know, the tire, you know, adhesion limits under braking and acceleration and cornering. And it's just condensed into a, you know, usually less than a 1 minute run. Naturally the speeds aren't there that you're going to see on an open course or open track, but it's essentially the same fundamentals. And you get guys, if you're good at autocrossing, you're going to be good on a road course, and it doesn't necessarily go the other way. If you're good on a racetrack or a road course, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a good autocrosser. Autocross is a great way to learn car control skills at a, you know, pretty affordable price and at low, you know, danger, you know, threshold. You're typically not going to have any, you know, body damage at an autocross course, where that is one of the factors.
Well, you might kill a couple cones, but you're not going to hit a tire wall and explode your whole entire vehicle. But
exactly.
Although we have seen some action at one of the good guys' events where somebody exploded up their C10 pickup.
Pickup bumper met some concrete, I think.
yeah, but you're right about the car control thing. You can walk the course just like you do an SECA event. You get to understand what an apex is and how to shave time. And essentially, racing is racing the clock. Yes, you're racing other people, but especially in the hobby forms of racing. You know, I guess it's fun to be fender to fender, although I've never been. But to me, it's beating your own skill set and growing within your skill set that is the challenge. At least it is with autocross, and that's what I like about it anyway.
Yeah, and it's a great, you know, it's you and your car versus a course and the time, you know, and There's nowhere to point blame. It's you, and you know, if you do great, it's because of what you did, and if you screw up, you know, you get the poor time, and it's a great way to learn, like I said, learn car control skills and have a great time doing it. Autocross is fun. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah. Well, let's jump ship a little bit. Let's get back to building a car. In conversations with you, I know that that Beamer that you had, the 3 Series BMW, you lightened it extensively. What are a couple of the things involved in prepping a car for, I don't know what the class would be, a stock prepared class or something like that? What was your class?
Well, the class I originally, you know, bought the car for was a spec E30. E30 is the chassis designation for that body style BMW, the late 80s, early 90s boxy BMW. So it was a spec E30 class, and I bought the spec springs and spec shocks, and it was going to be for that class. And
right.
In the process of building it, so I kind of fell into a 95 M3 engine and transmission. That I couldn't really turn away, so I ended up putting that engine and transmission into the car, and it kind of ruined the spec thing, but I was prepping the car for the GTS series, the German touring car series, and it's basically all German marks, you know, racing one another, and it's a wide-open rule set. They pretty much have a weight-to-power ratio that they go by, and they divide class, things up by class that way, but I was prepping for the GTS class, and that, you know, in that series, it's wide open rules. You strip the car of everything that's not needed to make the car accelerate, corner, or brake, and get rid of all the dead weight. There's other classes that are spec classes that, you know, they want to see the stock dashboard in there. They want to see door panels on the thing. They want it to represent more of the street version. And just to limit how much people can do. But essentially, when you're prepping a car for track use, it's, you know, if it doesn't make the car go faster or stop quicker or handle better or accelerate, it doesn't need to be on there. So a lot of that stuff goes away in favor of, you know, just end results.
Right, right. Well, that kind of leads into the listener's question. I'll just go ahead and read his question. His fellow's name is Bill Scholes. He's restoring a vintage Austin Healey. It's a 1960 3000 Mark I. And his question is, what is the correct material to make his roll bar? He's got a 4-point roll bar that he wants to put in his car. So obviously you went down this road and you had to pass some sort of inspection when you built your roll cage, right? Guide the listeners through some do's and don'ts and ins and outs of building a roll cage. What do you use? And that'll help answer Bill's question too.
Yeah, to answer his question, I would point him in the direction of DOM tubing. The drawn over mandrel tubing is seamless steel tubing. And if you're building a car for a certain series or for a certain race group, you need to pay attention to their rule book and make sure you're meeting the minimum requirements as far as wall thickness of the tubing. I know back when I got my roll cage in the early 2000s, I think it was allowed to have, electric welded tubing, with the non-DOM tubing, I guess, either way to say it.
Right.
And that was allowed at that time, but they're moving towards DOM tubing, as the only tubing choice to go with as far as roll cage construction. And it depends on how heavy your car is. For a car like that, it's going to be a small car, it's going to be a light car. You can probably get away with, you know, 1.5 or 1.625 DOM tubing, the 095 wall thickness. The heavier cars need the 120 wall thickness, and the larger tubing, 1.625 or 1.75. So the smaller the car, the less you can get away with. The heavier car, the more you need. You need to build by the rule books. And it's always a good idea to, you know, splurge a little bit on roll cage stuff. It doesn't hurt to add a couple of pounds with the roll cage weight if it's in the name of safety. So I usually don't mind stepping up one size in roll cage material just because of that.
Well, we all want to drive home after the event, so that's just good common sense.
Yeah.
But are there guides out there? Can you go online and get somebody's rule book and kind of get plans for a cage? Or where are some resources for people that want to do it right and they don't want to get flagged for something and ruin their day before they even get on the track?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure I know the NASA website, they have the rule book. It's available in a PDF format. I'm sure SCCA is the same way. There's BMW Car Club. There's all kinds of car clubs that, you know, organizations that run, rent track time, and they're the ones that control the, you know, the safety equipment requirements. So they're going to have some information available on what's required for each car type, the weight, things like that. So yeah, there's definitely resources out there. And there's always the you know, pre-constructed roll cage option too. There's more than a handful of companies that make bolt-in 4-point roll bars that are SCCA approved or NASA approved. So there's always that route too. And you can, you know, if you've got the more money than welding skills, it's always a good idea too to check out a ray shop in your area. You know, just to, it's a safety item. It's one thing you definitely want to get right.
So somebody that's got like a Mustang or a Camaro or even a Miata, you know, typically makes some models like that. They're going to have an industry that's behind them, obviously, with the automotive aftermarket that you and I participate in. So it's probably pretty common that you would be able to go to a catalog like a Summit or a Jags and get a roll cage that that's well done. Yes.
Yeah. The more common the car is, the more common the platform is, the more likely you're going to have, you know, an aftermarket option, like you said. If you got a Mustang or a Camaro or a 3 Series BMW or a Miata, you're usually in pretty good shape. If you're running an oddball car, you know, like the guy that's asking the question, I believe his name is Bill, he's kind of probably going to be on his own. But if you've got a 92 Fox Body Mustang, you're probably in good shape.
Right, right. When, if anybody has ever watched any of the YouTube fail videos, you can get a really good idea of how important a roll cage is by seeing some endos on somebody's track car. It's just amazing.
They can take a beating.
Well, it's better them than you and your ankles and stuff. And you touched on something a bit ago, and internet searching and information. Before we talked tonight, I did a couple of quick Google searches, and I found an amazing amount of information from different SCCA clubs and you know, classes and just all over the country of how to designate your car, what is it, how to fall within certain rules, and a great information, and it's free. I was very surprised at how much is out there, and it all seems to be in the spirit of being very sharing with this information and knowledge. It seems like it's really easy to find that information. So in your opinion, what are some of the best websites to you know, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but, you know, is it just a Google search? Would you search state by state or just local car clubs? How would you find out? How would you tell somebody to find out about stuff?
I mean, in my experience, I've run with NASA. That's, you know, I've run, you know, a couple other events, but mainly with NASA. So I tend to gravitate towards just going to the NASA website. I think it's a great resource. You can search by region. You know, they have the Mid-Atlantic, Southeast, Southwest, you know, the mountain region. That's, Florida has its own region. There's lots of region breakdowns in NASA. They can guide you towards local resources. Everybody's willing to help. This is a sport, and everybody says it's about the sport they're into. In this road racing, you know, go fast, you know, kind of sport we're in, everybody's willing to help everybody else get on the track, because that's, you know, that's what it's all about. Everybody wants to get to the track. The more people that can get to the track, the better, the more options there are, the more tracks they're going to build, I hope, and the more we get to do this. So there's a great group of guys in there willing to share information and help the new guys, the guys that are new to the sport, get them into it. They know once they try it once, they're going to be hooked and they're going to come back. So there's a lot of information out there, and the guys involved in the sport are definitely willing to help. Like I said, the NASA website's a great option. I'm sure the SCCA website is a great option. BMW Car Club, Porsche Car Club, Mustang Clubs of America. There's lots of information out there. Basically, what I would do is try to find the track you want to run at. You can look at their website or find the group you want to run with and take a look at their website.
Right, right. Well, what pulled the trigger with you? What made you decide to go and get your license and prep a car and do all of that stuff? What was it that put you over the edge?
You know, I had a fast street Mustang, and, you know, fast, I guess, back in the day, but maybe not so much nowadays, but it was an 89 5-liter Mustang, and it was a fun car that I like to go fast in, and I didn't even know road, you know, open track events were an option to the general public. And I was working for a guy who had kind of a, you know, half repair, half performance shop, and he and his son both were into the open track stuff, and his son raced, and, you know, asking him about it, and just seemed like, wow, just anybody can do this? I had no idea, you know, and yeah, you pay your entry fee, you sign up, you go down, and you just got to go for it. So, you know, I did it, and like I said, you do it once, and that's all you want to do is, you know, get back on track next. That's all that matters. When am I going to be out on track next? And, you know, what do I have to do to get the car ready? So, you know, that's how I got into it.
Well, cool. Well, fast forward until now. now you've got that beautiful Ranger that, you know, we've both got our blood, sweat, and tears in. And I don't know, what kind of plans have you got for that truck? Do you plan on doing more racing?
Yeah, actually, I've got an event scheduled before too long. I'm hoping to drag you down, too. So
yeah,
to Alabama,
okay.
Go to Barber Motorsports Park, and I'll see if I can get you riding a shotgun, maybe set the hook in you. But, yeah, I want to go down and have a little bit of fun. It's been too long since I've been on a true open track. It's been two or three years, probably. I've run some super speedway, events locally. But getting out on an open track is what I really miss, and we're going to do that shortly. And now that I got that truck, I love that truck. You did a great job on it. It's an awesome truck. It looks like it is on TV. And I plan on, just kind of fine-tuning it a little bit. It's got a ton of potential. It's already off to a great start. Now I think if I can shave a few more pounds off of it and dial things in, it can be a really real animal on the track and compete with a lot of cars.
Yeah.
You don't expect to see a pickup truck running up into the rearview mirror.
No, with the independent rear suspension and camber on the wheels, all four corners, all that kind of stuff. No, it's a little uncommon. And hey, shameless plug, it's got Eastwood paint on it, too.
Yeah, that's right. It does have great-looking paint on it. You know, when it was sitting in primer, it had that sinister look to it. But, primer, I don't need to tell you. It might look good for a little while, but that's about it. And it just doesn't have what the paint job needs to have. So, that dead red slack black looks killer on that thing. It gets compliments every time people look at it. It's a winner, and I'm going to keep that thing for a little while and see what I can do with it on the racetrack.
Cool. Sounds good. Well, we appreciate Bill asking his question, and thank you for helping answer it with a very educated spin. That's awesome. Is there anybody out there that, I guess through the years, Ryan, has mentored you or kind of given you a nudge when you were insecure about something? Anybody you want to throw a shout-out to or thank or just acknowledge with not necessarily what you're doing right now, but in the career path that you've had?
When I first got started doing this stuff, the guy that owned the shop, Gary Krishbaum, he was the one that, talked me into doing this the first time. And he was, I worked for him. I didn't work for that long. It was, in between jobs with BMW stuff. But during that time, he was the one that said, man, go for it. You can do it. It's done racing. If you can work on the car and you're willing to fix it yourself and prep it and take it to the next level, you just got to jump in there and do it. And there's been a lot of people along the way, that you pass on little tidbits of information. It only comes from experience. So there's a lot of people out there that help you go from one level to the next. I've had a ton of great instructors in the NASA program that are willing to do whatever it takes to get you through the weekend and to get you comfortable in the car and take you to the next level and teach you everything they know. So it's been a good experience dealing with people throughout the different levels. Coming up to the, HPDE or high performance driving event ranks, as you progress,
right.
You have a new instructor that's, you haven't met before, you get in the car, you guys sync up, and, you bond with this person, you're doing 140 miles an hour down the backstretch, and they're trusting their life in your hands, so, you get to know these people a little bit, and it's a good sport to get into.
Yeah, cool. It brings up another question that I wanted to ask you, and I just forgot. But what do you say to the person that says that the entry level track stuff? You got to wear a helmet. You got a fire extinguisher, a halon system, blah blah blah. It's not real man's racing. It's not it's not the danger level of street racing. What do you say to somebody that says, "Hell, I race on the street. I don't need to go to the track."
That's a dangerous game. Street stuff on the street, you're not doing anybody any favors, and you might be a whiz behind the wheel, but there's always something unexpected. You're in an uncontrolled environment. We're on the track, you get out on the track, they close the gates, there's not random people on cell phones. Yes, you're doing something that's inherently dangerous, you're going fast in a car, but it's, to me, I find it a much safer environment. Yes, there's helmets, yes, there's fire equipment, that's all stuff I embrace. I want to be safe. Everybody wants to go home at the end of the weekend, and stuff happens. So you never know when you're gonna, something might happen on the track, mechanical failure, something else, somebody else's car experiences a problem. Well, you get involved in something, so you want to be as safe as possible. And the guy that is a little intimidated by the safety gear, doesn't want to deal with safety gear and buying a helmet and you know, maybe a pair of racing gloves and a fire extinguisher for the car. You know, you just got to pony up and do it sometimes. You got to pay to play, and it's a smart thing to do in the long run.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I completely agree with you as far as the environment, the controlled environment of a track as opposed to the interstate or a back road. It's just,
yeah.
You know, we've all done our share of stupid things behind the wheel of a car.
Yeah.
But it's nice to know that we...
Yeah, and there's no shortage of dumb things I've done behind the wheel. But on a racetrack, you've got corner workers, you know, in flag stations that are letting you know if there's a problem ahead, letting you know if there's a car approaching, you know, at a rapid speed behind you. So it really is a controlled environment. And, you know, having fun on the street is just not wise, not wise.
Yeah, yeah, and the tickets are expensive.
Yeah, nobody wants those. That's the best possible result if you get a ticket.
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, man, I want to thank you for spending some time with us and taking the time out of your day to be on Shop Talk and expunging of your vast wisdom. And also, Ryan, I want to thank you publicly for answering all of my stupid questions over the years about, you know, everything from suspension geometry to welding techniques. I really appreciate your help and your willingness to share your knowledge. And, you know, that's really what it's all about. You touched on that. And I just want to say thanks out loud, man.
No, I appreciate it. It goes both ways. You've taught me a lot over the years. And, you know, I came into doing this stuff. You know, my spray paint, you know, all the paint I had came out of a can and rattled, you know. I didn't know how to do any of this stuff. You know, now I've actually done a little bit of body work, and that's thanks to you and the stuff you've been willing to teach me. So, yeah, that's a two-way street, and I appreciate it as well. It's been really cool being on the show, man, and thanks for the opportunity. It's been fun.
Well, absolutely. Hopefully it won't be the last time, and if we bring our vehicles, or heck, if I just ride shotgun with you with Rolling Thunder out of the track, maybe we'll touch on this again and
yeah,
hopefully
yeah.
We live to talk about it.
Sure, man. Yeah, you're coming with me.
Heck yeah, absolutely. It's a done deal.
Cool.
You're listening to Shop Talk. This is brought to you by the Eastwood Company, and we just had a great conversation with Ryan Shand. Remember, do the job right with Eastwood. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Ryan's one of those guys that walks the walk, and if you ever get the chance to say hello to him at a trade show, a track event, or a car show, I know you'll find him to be a great guy and willing to share of his knowledge and experience. We appreciate his time today. So until next time, I'm Kevin Tates, and this is Shop Talk. And remember, do the job right with Eastwood. Check out everything at the Eastwood.com website. Eastwood has what it takes to do the job right. And you know me, I like to do the job right. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk. I'm Kevin Tates.